because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and I'm sitting here like an idiot, and Casey's going to laugh because I'm thinking I started to type, do you have Tony? And then I realized I have to call Tony. And I think I reached him. Tony, good morning.
Good morning. He's fine. I was on the other line with Comcast because my TV went out. I can't even watch TV today on my day off.
Well, that's all right. You got radio. You got to talk on the radio with me. Did I lose you? Well, that was weird. Tony? Tony, where are you? That was strange. I think he muted himself, actually. I'm going to guess because we're still connected. That's the one advantage of me making the calls, I guess, is that I can see that, you know, we're still, what should I do? This is funny. Tony, come on. What are you doing? No? All right. So here, let me try this. We will, let me hang up and I'll call Tony back. What are you doing to me, Tony? There we go. Let's try this again. Oh no, this is bad. That might have been, he might have a phone issue because now it's giving me a recording. How about that? That might have been, That might be an issue, that goes beyond just the, there we go. let's try this again with Tony Black. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I'm having some difficulty. I'm on this cell phone, and I got two lines activated and trying to get the Comcast cable up and running. And they're beeping me now, too.
All right. You know what? Yeah. You know what? Go ahead. Go take them, and I've got something I can do for a couple of minutes, and then come back.
Okay. Hold on. Okay.
Right. Go ahead. Take that call. All right. I'll turn Tony down. And let me go back. It's pretty funny. Let me go back to what we were doing before the break and give you an idea about what you can look forward to, because it's a nice sequence, particularly the late sequence. A City of Hope. The City of Hope Mile goes as the fifth. Kafkin Peak and Iridio. Marcelo Polanco, Phil D'Amato, of course, when it comes to these stakes on turf, like the Eddie D and the, we also got the John Henry. Phil's going to be, you know, he's going to be like a rash in the entry box. Kafkin Peak, D'Amato, Iridio, Marcelo Polanco, Beyond Brilliant for John Sheriffs and CRK, Tarantino, Ed Mosher, and Prince Obama for Phil D'Amato, and Canderel, a Wertheimer and Frere for Mandela. Takes the blinkers off. Your John Henry came together with three D'Amatos. Gold Phoenix on the rail for Little Red Feather and Partners, including Sterling and Nafee. Breakpoint, the Don Alberto for Uncle Neil Drysdale. Dicey Moshara. Leonard Powell, of course, had plenty of success. Master of Foxhounds for D'Amato and Rockingham. Tropical Terror, nice to see Jim Cassidy in the entry. Daron Pearson and Jim are partnered on Tropical Terror. And Cash Equity, Matticat, Dub, Strauss for Phil D'Amato. So Phil, boy, three in the John Henry and two in the City of Hope. And then in the Eddie D, D'Amato's got another pair in the middle of the field, Gregorian Chant and Coulthard. But Laneway for Mandela, Air Force Red for Powell, Goliad for Mandela. So Richard with the two of the D'Amato's that I mentioned, Gregorian Chant and Coulthard, slam dunk, of course, and kind of rooting. Listen, I root for Nick Casado anyway, but Nick's had a tough stretch summer and early fall, so rooting for the pendulum to swing back in the positive direction for slam dunk. Coulthard for the Manoogians, and Beristan the Bold in here for George Papapodromo. How about What Makes Sammy Run? Mark Latt, one of our favorites. The great Bud Schulberg novel, of course, if you've never read it, pick it up. Dubai Key, Amador Sanchez. Nice big day, potentially, for Sanchez. And Jack Sisterson out there with Tango, Tango, Tango. So there are your fields for the stakes action at Santa Anita to kick things off. And, of course, they'll be drawing the Saturday. The Sunday, I should say. The Sunday stakes later today. And that includes the... I know the Zenyatta, right, is Sunday, and a couple others. The Chili, the Chillingworth, the Tokyo Cup, and the Speakeasy. There you go. There's your Sunday Santa Anita races. And, of course, in New York, the Frisette and the Pilgrim and the Belmont Turf Sprint. And actually, the Belmont Turf Sprint, I'm sorry, is Saturday. The other Belmont race was the Weah. The Weah, which I think... I think there's a Weah. We run a Weah at Saratoga, and then again in the fall. There's two Weahs. You know what they say? There's more than one Weah to skin a cat. Hey now, Tony, are you back?
Yeah, I'm back. Can you hear me, Steve?
I got you now. There you go.
All right.
That was bad. That was bad. There's more than one Weah to skin a cat. Oh boy, Tony! What a fun day we had on Saturday. Thanks for everything, including that visit down to the jocks room, which was we didn't really get a chance to talk about it with Johnny on Monday, but or Tuesday. But we really had a nice time. Thank you.
You guys made my day by coming, and it was a nice time and a visit to the jocks room. It's always good to see the shipping riders, and one especially, Mike Smith. And plus he got the job done, so we might have brought him some luck, not that he needed it. But anyway, it was good to see him. I was real close with his dad. His dad worked at Parks for many years, and Mike and I even reminisced a little about that. You know, he says, I always think of his dad when he comes to Parks, and I guess Dad's looking over him because he got the job done from Taiba.
I had not realized it until you mentioned it back upstairs at the table. But Mike's dad came off the racetrack.
Yeah, Mike's dad's name George. George worked at Parks. He galloped horses. He did just about everything. But then he ran the parking lot. He was in the Horseman's parking lot for many years and ran that. He's just a good guy and real close. I was real close with him. He was a good influence on me when it came to sobriety. He had been through his trials and tribulations in life, and he had many years of sobriety. And he was not a sponsor, but a guy that I could go and talk to, and he was always there for us.
Nice. Nice. I'm glad it came up. You know, it's fun. I mean, in New York, the only opportunity we get, you know, we can go in that, at Saratoga, you can go in that corridor, that passes through, but you don't really go in, you know, it's very rare that an outsider gets in the jocks room at all. And, down at Aqueduct, actually, it's a little easier, because you walk by it and you can walk in to sort of an alcove, kind of a waiting seating area, so you sort of see the whole room. But that was one of my first experiences like that, and just, you know, sort of, you know, seeing it's amazing. It's amazing, the equipment. I don't think people. That's why I put up the pictures that I did. I wanted them to, you know, the Silks room was adjacent, and I put up a picture of you and Johnny. But you don't really realize how much equipment is involved, and you know, the valets have all their stuff that is kept you know, in proximity, and you know, then there's, you know, everything that a jock requires in your tack bag. It's quite a scene, actually, and it, you know, I know that there's, you know, there's certainly been movies or documentaries or, you know, occasions where we get brought into jocks' rooms. It's amazing.
You there, Steve?
Yeah, we're there. I'm here.
Oh, okay. You cut out, I thought. Yeah, you know, jocks' rooms, it's an interesting place. It's a world in its own. You know, you have the locker room, which we went into, and the color room, of course, connected to the locker room. You've got 12, 13 valets working up there, and there might be anywhere from 20 to 45 riders riding on any given day. I think that day there was 30-some riders riding the card. Yeah, and then you have a rec room. But we didn't go back into the rec room and a lunch room, a lunch counter and everything. It's a world of its own. And you know what? You better be a person, if you're a jock that comes to a jock room, you better be a person that's able to get along in close quarters. Because you put 30 or 40 riders in that room and 13 valets and a clerk of scales, and then you have officials in and out of there. You better be able to get along with people or you won't survive. And you better be able to, if you're a person that can dish it out, you better be able to take it too. Because there's plenty of busters up there. But it is an interesting area of the racetrack, the jocks room.
Tony, got a couple of things too. The, you know, watching how things unfolded on Saturday. And, you know, we had talked going in on Friday about the racetrack and the expectation. And sure enough, as it seems, every cotillion Pennsylvania Derby day, the speed was good. And at least being, you know, in the vanguard and being near the lead was a necessity. You couldn't find yourself too far back, and that played out consistently all afternoon.
Yeah, it certainly did. And, you know, the track had a pretty uniform bias. It, you know, that track is known to always be slow on the inside because it has the bank of the racetrack is a little more excessive than every racetrack, generally speaking. So a lot of times, if they don't grade it out, that dirt will work its way down in onto the fence, and the fence will be slower than the rest of the racetrack. But they make sure on big race days that they have a pretty uniform bias. And you know what? From my years of experience, it usually has a speed bias, as it did Saturday. It's an interesting track to ride on. But you better be aware of what's going on, because on any given day, you might ship in there. It won't be a big race day, and you'll think saving ground is all that you have to do, and saving ground on certain days isn't exactly going to work out because your inside can be slower than the rest of the track on a just average race day.
Well, and in terms of, in terms of some of the results that, you know, the way things unfolded, we certainly got to give some credit. I guess I haven't had a chance to flesh this part of the day out, but how about Scaramucci's win for Lupe Preciado, and a terrific ride by Johnny? And I have not had the chance, the week is flying by. Butchie Reed gets another win in the Greenwood Cup with riding with Biden, Paco Lopez on the front end. And what about Michael Moore? And his nice win. So, you know, plenty of local representation. It wasn't just the heavy heads coming in and stealing all the money.
No, yeah, you know, when you mentioned Lupe, he won two that particular day. Michael Moore, some locals won races. because I think Lupe won the last race also, I believe. I believe it was the last race.
Yeah, he did with that with the by land and sea, the old Doug O'Neill. Yep.
But it's good to see that, you know, the local representation is not inferior to the ship-ins. You know, of course, your ship-ins are coming and they're pumped up and ready to rock and roll and win a race. But, you know, the local representation was good to see. It really was.
You know, I'm going to be in trouble because tomorrow's weekend preview, but I owe Michael Moore a call. I mean, he wins, and this horse of his, That's Right, you know, that basically ran him off their feet. He really didn't have a choice coming from the inside, and actually the horse only really knows one way, but he's won four of his last five, and winning a grade three, that's a very nice stripe for, you know, what was a, you know, fairly modest $62,000 purchase. I mentioned that our friend Ed Seltzer bred this Golden Sense colt, and, you know, is Breeders' Cup eligible? I don't know why they wouldn't consider, you know, considering it's five furlongs, I don't know why they wouldn't consider the Breeders' Cup with him. I mean, he's got to speed it up a little bit, but I was really impressed with That's Right on Saturday.
Well, when I see Mike Moore, maybe I'll talk to him and tell him what you said, how you were impressed. He's a local guy that does a good job with every kind of horse that he's had, from $5,000 claimers to now to stake horse. He does do a good job. I met his parents. They're really nice people. And I even complimented them one day on their son's training ability. And he's just a real good regular guy. You know, if I see him, I might go over there tomorrow. I have to take care of some things over there. I might go over there. I'll try to look Michael up.
All right, tell him we'll get him on. I want to ask him more about this horse. And you know, out of curiosity, since we went in this direction, give me one second. Then I've got a question that came out of yesterday, and I don't know if you had a chance to listen to what transpired yesterday involving Todd Fincher, but I got a very good question that came from our friend Frank Conwell. And Frank's been a listener forever, and he Did you happen to hear, you know, we're dealing with another one of these crop violations, and Heisa trying to, you know, I told you about this, take the $108,000 purse away.
Yeah, when I heard that, that you know, really incites a lot of anger in me that they came up with these ridiculous crop rules. And, you know, it actually, what this rule does, it actually discredits the authorities that watch the race, the stewards that are observing every race and observing every rider's performance and horse's performance. You're actually saying, well, they don't know what they're looking at, so we have to put this rule in place that guides them. You're discrediting the people. When they put rules like this in place, it discredits the people that have the authority to monitor the race. You're actually saying that they might have the authority, but they don't know what they're doing. And that's ridiculous. You have stewards up there, and you have people monitoring races and that actually know what they're looking at. And if there's a problem with a misuse or abuse of a whip, they should be the ones that pick up on it and grab that rider and, you know, whatever they have to do to make him see their point of view. But you don't need a specific rule and take all the judgment away from jockeys in what they're doing. You know, I mean, when you're out there, you ride with instinct at times, and you ride with the feel of what the horse is doing and how he's responding to you. You can't make blanket rules that say that horse, every horse is going to respond in this particular way to that jockey's instinct and that jockey's judgment. And like I said, if you're really concerned with the abuse of the whip, put it on the people that are monitoring the race and the authorities that are looking at the race while the race is running. They're supposed to know what they're looking at, and they can come up with the opinion that a whip was misused. You can't have blanket rules.
The question, the interesting question that Frank is asking, Tony, is there a benefit to lowering stirrups and riders exerting more control with their legs as an alternative, and in fact more than just control, but even even motivating a horse a little bit, not that they're going to put spurs back on, but not that that's the craziest thing we've ever heard, but certainly in this era we're not going in that direction. But is there some potential to, and what benefit is there to urge a horse that way on the haunches there with your legs?
Well, I wouldn't think that you could that you would drop your stirrups to any real long length to use your legs. I mean, when you purchased over top of a horse, and I rode basically a little longer than some riders, a little shorter than others. You know, I rode right in the middle there. And sometimes you'd see some of these riders that really jack their irons up. And they'd say, man, you really ride long. And, it was just that was the time period that I came around. I rode comfortable. You know, I wasn't just sitting there with my jacked up my irons as high as they would go. You might be able to get some feel for a horse by dropping your irons down. And maybe you're saying, like, kick them with your heel. But, you can probably do the same thing even when they're a little bit short, where you bring your foot out and pop it back in to the horse's side, even if it's above his not in the middle of his rib cage. I don't think that's the answer to the whole problem. I don't think it would make a big difference. Your contact with the horse is your hands, and that has an effect where you can take the reins. You can actually, you see some riders actually slap the reins against their neck. Horses, when it comes to the stick, a lot of times it's not what they feel from the stick. It's the noise the sticks make. If you want to make the stick more humane, as they've done with these foam, high-density foam on the poppers, and they're not leather poppers right anymore. They're 6-inch high-density foam, tubular foam. I think that was a good first move. And the one thing about it, this high-density, long tubular popper, when it does make contact with the horse, I mean, if it made contact with you, you wouldn't even flinch. But when it makes contact with the horse, it makes a lot of noise. It's not like the old flat leather popper had to hit them flat to make a slapping sound. These high-density foam poppers, tubular poppers, when they touch the horse, you can hear it. You can hear it across the racetrack. So I think the sound does affect them in a way that it kind of startles them and makes them run, makes them pay attention. I just think that we're going about this the wrong way when it comes to here. We're trying to appease the animal rights activists to show them that we're more humane by changing whip rules and only using them a limited amount of time. You're never going to make those people fans of racing.
Yep.
So it doesn't matter what you do or say to them. They're never going to be fans. But let's not take and discredit the betting public by making these whip rules that limit a jock from doing his best on that horse's back. The point of the game, it's a competitive game. The point is to get to the wire first and utilize your horse and make him extend himself at a full amount that you can get him to extend himself. These whip rules are totally ridiculous, because here you're talking about a horse wins and the jock hit him two more times than what's allowed. You're actually sending a message out there. Well, when you hit the maximum amount of times, you can't hit anymore. Even if the horse might respond and run and get a more forward position, but you can't do that. It totally goes against what jockeys were trained to do. In fact, if you didn't persevere and do your best with that horse, you usually wound up getting set down. And ruled off, or you were watching the races for several weeks or months or days or whatever. You weren't out there competing. The purpose of a jockey is to get the most forward position with that horse and do the right thing on that horse's back and do everything in a fair, competitive way. This is bull what they're doing with these whip rules. They went the wrong way. They're just trying to appease organizations that are animal rights activists. You're trying to appease them, and you'll never appease them.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I completely, completely, completely agree. We had Rich yesterday, too, and he, you know, went through a little bit of this. But I did want to, Frank wrote that question, and I thought it was a good one. If there was any, you know, if there was any alternative means to, you know, to essentially, you know, urge a horse along without, you know, without going to the implement. So we got that answer. All right. Now, Tony, it's always a it's always a fabulous trip down there, and it you know, when you see parks like that, it, you know, it just realize the potential that's there. You know, it's only a handful of days a year that, you know, that they really kind of open the doors up for everybody and try to, you know, bring in a big crowd like that. And but when they do, it's so vibrant, and it's always a great day.
Yeah, you had 13 races and 140 horses running. I mean, what a premier race day they put on. And, you know, and it's a pretty nice facility. And in the good weather, you would love to see the families come and bring the kids, and maybe we could generate some new interest with racing fans and show some of these young people what racing's all about. Because there's a nice picnic grove, and you can have a picnic and a party day and a day to bet on winners and get an exciting view of racing close up right on the outside fence. You can hear the rumbling. You know, you take these kids out there, and you take them up against the outside fence through the stretch, and these horses, the rumbling of the horses coming down the stretch, it's, you know, it's great to see. It's an exciting sport. And in this day and age, we got to do something to generate all the new fans that we can, because it is a great sport. And when it comes to gambling, it's cerebral. You know, you use your head to pick winners. It's not like playing the lottery where you just say a number. Or let the computer pick out some numbers. You can actually handicap it in art, and it uses your brain power to try to pick a winner. It's a great sport, and you do a great job promoting it, Steve. I can't thank you enough for all the positive things that you do for this sport.
Tony, too nice, and it's so much fun to walk around the building there with you, and you know, everybody lights up, and Tony, you know, Tony's like the Pied Piper. Everybody, you know, comes running up and happy to see him, and the, you know, people that are working at the track, and the players and fans, and you know, everybody. So, one of my favorite trips of the year, Tony. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. You made that day a favorite day of mine at Parks.
Well, and you know, having won a cotillion in Pennsylvania Derby doesn't hurt either, Tone, for you, for it to be a special day.
If it wasn't for you, I would have never known that I won the cotillion. You brought that to my attention. And it was for a horse named Suede Shoes for Frank Whiteley.
Not like so that. Bad. Yeah. Not so bad, right?
Yeah. And what a guy. And Frank trained another horse. He used to ride me on horses. Didn't Frank train Forgo? Was it Forgo? Frank trained Forgo, right?
Forgo.
Yeah, he trained Forgo, right?
What? I think, yeah.
Yeah, because I went to it when Garden State burned down. We went to his barn at Belmont, and I had a friend of mine that was a friend of his. And this guy was a jocks agent, too, Henry Block. He was a retired rider.
Right.
He says, come on, let's go over and see Frank Whiteley. So we went over and saw Frank. He was at the barn bright and early. And there was a special stall for Forgo. It was like a double stall.
Right.
You know? So he said to me, he says, I said, let's go look at the big horse. And we went over and looked at the big horse. And he said to me, hey, kid, you want to get up on the big horse? I'll put you up on him right now in the stall. And you can tell people you sat on Forgo. Don't you know he did that?
I love it.
So I sat on Forgo.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
And that was just because he loved Henry Block, and I was friends with Henry.
I love it.
1977, I guess it was.
Yeah, that'd be about right. Yeah, 70. Yeah.
And I sat on Forgo. You don't sit on much greater horses than that.
No, no. Tony.
It was in the stall.
That's all right. It doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. That's fine. You had a leg over on him. Tony, thanks so much. Thanks so much.
You take care, Steve, and thank you for all you do. You're a positive influence on a great sport of racing, and I appreciate everything you do. I love you, Steve. Take care, brother.
Love you, too. Tony Black, everybody. Actually, we're not taking the break because we took the midway break, and we're going to go out to Vegas, I think, because last I saw Dave Hill, he was at Circa, I think, yesterday. So we're going to... We're going to see where he is. See if he's still hanging at Circa or wherever he might be. All right, he might not necessarily be expecting the call from me. So we'll see. Been trying to connect with Michael Moore too, and I have, but it doesn't look like we can get him on today. So we'll get him next week. Dave Hill is going to join us though, and it's that time of the week because it's Thursday. There's football tonight, and actually a terrific game. And Dave is coming off one of those weeks. This is one of the weeks where figuratively, David, the listeners are carrying you, out down the tunnel on their shoulders.
They shouldn't. I guess because I gave out some winners on the show, right?
Some. You're don't. You're not going to do that with me. You either went 7-1 or 7-2, depending on how we view that Cardinal game.
Yeah, you know, it's like the in the paper I have to pick every game, you know, and so in full disclosure, for the full card, I went 7-9. But, you know, the ones I felt the best about that I gave on your show, they did well. So, you know, if I didn't bet every game of the week, I just have to pick them all at times.
That's right.
There's a big difference between the games that you just say, okay, by gun to my head, this is what I'm going to pick versus the games where you really, so I feel pretty good about last week.
Well, and I was lauding it going into Monday night for everybody, and I put it out on Twitter as well because it started with Cleveland, then all those outright winners, and we've talked pretty much every week about home dogs, and they've been potent. Tennessee was an outright winner that you liked. Miami was outright over Buffalo, and Carolina was the third outright winner that was getting points at home. So those three helped to buoy you and run to a 7-0, essentially a 7-0 record going into that Arizona game. And even that, I said that wasn't even technically a loss because you made it provisional. You said get 4.5 that you'd be interested. And then the Giants, of course, returned to the mean on Monday night.
Yeah, shouldn't have gone there. But, you know, it's interesting because honestly, you could have thrown a dart at a dartboard of underdogs and done well. I mean, there was last week there were 9 straight up underdog wins last week. And then against the spread there were I think 10. So the underdogs are killing it this season. For whatever reason, it's been a safe bet these first 3 weeks to bet underdogs and yeah, this last weekend if you'd have bet them straight up, you'd have done really well.
Is that would you characterize it? You know, parity is a word that you know has been tossed around a little bit, probably too much, when it comes to this league. But what do you attribute it to per se?
I think that it's a combination of parity and variance. I think that when you've got teams that are, pretty closely matched. I think that we have a tendency to look at teams and think that they're less close in ability than they really are. There's a recency bias that comes from having watched the game from the week before. And, you may watch a game and see a team get completely blown out. So you think in the next game, they're a bad team. But it's hard to know when you're watching a game whether or not you're watching a bad team play poorly, a good team play exceptionally well, or if you're watching a game where some sort of random factors have changed the some sort of small variance in the game changed the course of the game, right? Where, I mean, a good example is week one, you know, where weather in Chicago created a game that probably will change all San Francisco's whole season, will affect, you know, have kind of a ripple effect in their record the rest of the year. So I think that or turnovers, blown calls, things like that can really change the direction of a game. And blowouts in the NFL, we have to remember, like, you know, a blowout in the NFL could be a two scores. And so that also speaks to how closely matched a lot of these teams are. It's not like in college where we see blowouts where teams win by four or five scores. You know what I mean? That doesn't exist in the NFL. So that's where I wrote about this in my column this week, but this is just a league where variance plays a big role, right? And this is why the NFL is such a difficult sport to bet on. It's also a difficult sport for the teams to play in, a league to play in, because you have a very small number of games relative to other sports. You know, you have a single elimination playoff, and so very small factors play a very outsized role in the outcomes of these games. And I think that's why underdogs are doing well, especially last week. One of the things you and I talked about was how the spreads were pretty thin. I mean, there was no game where the spread was over a touchdown. So the bookmakers thought those were all pretty close matchups. And so in a game like that, of course, underdogs have some chances. You know, of course you can, you're going to have a lot of games where the underdogs win. It's just a question, you know, some of those dogs that won last week were 1-point dogs. You know what I mean? So you can't, is that really an underdog? I mean, when you're at 1.5 points on the other side of the zero, that's effectively a pick 'em.
Well, and you know, that's actually an interesting aside. And just looking this week, there's actually three. Kansas City, Tampa is under 2. Arizona, Carolina is under 2. And Cleveland, Atlanta is under 2. Everything else is...
The Rams.
Yeah. Monday night. I didn't look that far down. Monday night that's interesting. Rams getting,
they're getting points. Yeah.
That feels like some sort of an oddball invitation for, this is one of those, Vegas, you're right. What are they doing there?
Well, I mean, I struggle with this too. Like, I wonder when I see things like that, when my first instinct is like, wow, they got that wrong. This team's better than that team. I have to take, you know, I pump the brakes and think, what am I missing? And I think that's what you're sort of doing here too. I think that, you know, one of the things that's happening here is that the 49ers are still a good team, right? They're still, they're not, you know, they've had some difficulty already this season, but they're still one of the, you know, they're in the top half of teams in the NFL for sure. I mean, they may, I may go out on a limb here, but I just think that they're still, I don't know where I'd put them, but definitely in the top half of the teams in the league. And this is a team that might be in the top 10 because they still have a very powerful offense. They've had to deal with some injuries, but there's this recency bias, like I mentioned before, where we watched them lose a game, get blown out, and think, oh, they stink. But you know, it's like the saying goes, any given Sunday, not only on any given Sunday can any team win, a team can also have a really bad day where things aren't working right. They make adjustments, they come back, and they should play to form, especially if they've got all their players on the field. And so, you know, in the power rankings, a lot of handicappers are still keeping the 49ers pretty high, not as high as they were last year, but high enough that they should keep it close to the Rams at home, I think, is what people are thinking. And the Rams are a team that's been dealing with some injuries. So I make the Niners to win a very close game, maybe by a point. So I think that the line has gotten to a good place. They were laying 2.5 earlier in the week when I made my picks. So I took the Rams with 2.5. I think at 1 point, though, it becomes a different question about whether or not you want to play it.
Interesting. All right. So should I put the Rams down for you for 2.5? Is that one of the primes?
That's what That's not a problem. No, that's what I picked in the paper, but it's definitely not one of my. It's not one I felt great about.
All right. Well, then let's dance around here, and in terms of quality of game, tonight's Miami Bengal game has got the variety of important storylines, the Bengals. We talked about the Bengals last week, and lo and behold, you were on them, and the Jets were, the Jets were the Jets. The Jets and the Giants both they both got back to what we hope for them.
I think that Miami. Yeah, I think we have a lot of good games this weekend, and this one tonight's going to be really fun. Because we're going to get to see a real test for Miami. I mean, I say a real test. They've had some real tests already. I think people are all waiting for Miami to, cough it up. But I like them tonight. I think that they can win this game. And I think that getting points is even better. I think they can win the game outright. But I think it's going to be a close one. So I got 4 points and I took it. They're on the road, but... they're one of two undefeated teams left in the NFL. They haven't made any mistakes yet. I love this head coach. I love everything that he's doing. This guy just speaks my language. I mean, he's just such a contrarian. His whole philosophy is if this is the way we're supposed to do it, that means the defense knows that we're supposed to do it. So they're going to prepare for that. So let's do everything the opposite of what we're supposed to do. And he's got guys running routes, into the middle where the defenses don't think receivers are supposed to run routes. He's just playing a different game than everybody else out there, and that's the kind of stuff I love. So I'm on the Dolphins bandwagon right now, and I think this will be a fun game, and I think they're going to win it on prime time.
8:15 tonight, and the Finns in against the Bengals. Let's get into the Sunday action, and I forgot about all these London games that now are going to turn up on the schedule. I don't know how many there are, but Minnesota and New Orleans coming to you from...
Yeah, New Orleans and the Vikings are playing in London, so you got to get up real early for that one, depending on what coast you're on. I'm on the West Coast, so I got to get up at 6:30 to watch that game. It's going to be fun. I think, it's a road game for both teams. New Orleans has already, they've been out there. Minnesota waited because they were dealing with, their running back. Dalvin Cook has got some injury issues, and they were wanting to see if he could recuperate before they made the trip. See if he would, I think he was going to go with them either way, but just to sort of give him time to rest and repair at home. So New Orleans has been up there kind of acclimating themselves all week, which I think gives them a little bit of an edge. I like them to win. That's another dog I think can win straight up. I got 3 points with them. I don't know where they're at now, but
3.5.
They're still at 3.
Yeah, 3.5.
3.5, even better. Take it. I like New Orleans with points. Yeah.
Is there on some of your data site? Unabated and whatnot. Is there a variance for neutral site games? Is there historical relevance?
The way that I factor, I think I talked about this on your show before, but I factor. So I don't think the power rankings the Massey Peabody power rankings, for example, they don't look at matchups. They just rank the teams in strength, and then I use those power rankings to kind of do my own handicapping. And when I do it, I give home teams 1.65 points for home field advantage, and then I will add a little bit to certain fields, Seattle, Denver. There's a couple places that I give a little bit of an edge to.
Noise.
But nothing over two points ever. So 1.65 to maybe 1.95 points for home field advantage. So in a game like this where there's no home field advantage, you just don't give one of the teams that 1.5 points. You just handicap it with just the power rankings is on a neutral field. And I'm not seeing 3.5 anywhere on the board right now. So I think that that 3.5 is gone. I think it's
all right. Came back
it's
down.
2.5
Oof.
Everywhere. There's
Oof.
A 3. There's a 3 at Bet Rivers still. So grab that if you can, because they're slow to catch this. But it looks like, whatever it is, there must have been some action this morning. I can open it up and see what time they moved it. Looks like the line Yeah, I mean, it was moving last night, but I don't, I'm not seeing any 3.5.
All right, because
everything's 2.5.
What I've printed out from you for you each week, I'm using this.
Okay.
They've been very good. They've been. So this is the first one that that seems a little, you know, seems a little behind the timing.
Well, it just shows. I mean, I got closing line value there, right? So I make my picks on Tuesdays, and I take the line on Tuesday. One thing that you always have to pay attention to is by the time the game kicks off, where did the line close versus where you got it at? You know, in sports, unlike in horse racing, you lock in the odds when you make the bet. So I think that when the line moves that way, if I got 3.5, now you can only get 2.5, then I got closing line value. I got a better number than I would have had if I waited. It also means that I got a better number than what it should have been if you assume that the market, you know, the market's sort of price discovery is right, then I got good value. You know, I essentially bought something cheaper than what it's worth now. I made a good investment. Whether or not the Saints cover or win, you know, it still means that it's a good bet. So I'll feel good about that bet. If the line closes at 2.5 or even lower, I'll feel good about that bet because it means I got good closing line value, even if I lose it, because that's what we're always looking for. So if you're going to bet early in the week, is to try to anticipate the line movement moving against you so that you've got good value. Buy low, sell high, right?
Exactly. All right, let's pick a couple other spots that stand out to you then. And there are some big lines. Seattle, Detroit, the Lions giving 4.5. Dallas is giving 3.5 to Commanders. Indy is giving 3.5 to Tennessee. Eagles are giving 6.5 to Jacksonville. You mentioned, in fact, your piece this week, and I'll put the link up to the New York Times, Dave's piece this week. You basically focus on the two undefeated teams, my Eagles and Chuck Simon's Dolphins.
I'm scared of a lot of those games that you mentioned. I'm really, you know, these big spread games make me nervous. You know, the Green Bay game in particular, I picked in the paper, I picked the Patriots, but I'm very scared of that game just because, you know, with the quarterback change, it's a big unknown. And but I do think because it was such a big spread, I was inclined to take the points there. Obviously, I think New England will lose that game. I do think with your team, the Eagles, I feel a little better about Jacksonville in that spot taking that many points. I do think the Eagles win that game for sure. But the Jags, they're just playing so well. They've got so much fight. I can't imagine the Jags losing by two scores here. The thing is, I got 6.5, and you know, I feel a little bit nervous about that. But I think they'll be within that many points of the Eagles at the end of the game. So I like taking the points with Jacksonville there. And so that's a game I feel a lot of confidence in. I the Dallas Washington game is a conundrum. I struggled with that one. I wasn't sure what to make of what was going on there with that point spread, because when you look at it, this is similar to what you brought up with the Rams and the Niners. I mean, Washington looked terrible. It's not that Dallas looked great, but Dallas is really good at sacking quarterbacks, and Carson Wentz is really good at getting sacked. So I worried that that was going to be a much bigger spread than what the bookmakers were saying. And so I wondered there too, what was I missing? You know, why is the spread just, is it just a field goal? But I think, again, there's some recency bias in watching those last two games. And, you know, when I look at the power rankings, I mean, you know, both of these teams are bottom half teams. And Washington is probably ranked higher than Dallas in the power rankings. When you look at offensive stats across the board, the only stat that Dallas has the edge over Washington with is rushing. And, you know, Washington's got more yards this season. They've got more passing yards. They do more yards per attempt. I mean, so, you know, you can see why bookmakers think that game should be closer than maybe at first glance somebody who watched both those teams' games last week would think. But the Cowboys weren't playing the Commanders, and the Commanders weren't playing the Cowboys. So We all kind of fall into that trap a little bit. So I don't feel great about that game, but I took Washington and the points in that one. But a game that I did feel pretty strong about is Atlanta and Cleveland. I think Atlanta's going to win this game outright at home. They're getting a point, maybe 1.5, I think.
Yep.
The total of that game is huge. It's like 50 points. Maybe it's over 50 points. So I think, you know, people are expecting a really high-scoring game. And if that's true, it's going to be because Atlanta scores a lot of points. You know, they've got a really great passing offense this season, and they've got issues on defense that they got to work on. But the reason I like Atlanta this week is I think that Cleveland's not going to be a team that's going to put up a big – I don't think that the Cleveland's going to put as big of a challenge to Atlanta's struggling defense as other teams have. And I just think that Cleveland, to keep up with Atlanta and all the kind of all the points they put on the board, they're going to have to work overtime. So I like Atlanta to win that game.
You've made a steady habit of these home dogs, and there's two others, three others we should bring up then. Baltimore with the Bills visiting, and Houston getting 5.5 with the Chargers in town, and then Sunday night, Tampa and Kansas City. You said, you know, there were a number of marquee matchups. And
yeah, Tampa Bay is going to win. I think Tampa Bay is going to win that game. So giving them 2 points is a no-brainer. I'm taking Tampa Bay there all day. I think they're going to win. I think, you know, we're getting Brady is getting back two receivers this week, and I think he's just been struggling to figure out who to throw the ball to, you know? So now he gets Evans back from suspension, and then, you know, Goodwin's not coming back from injury, but Julio Jones is going to play. So I like him. I like taking Tampa Bay. And with the other one that you mentioned, the other home dog you mentioned, Houston, against the Chargers. The Chargers are the most banged up team in the NFL right now. You know, they're dealing with so much on the injury front. Giving Houston 5 at home seems like a good bet, too. I'd take Houston on that game.
You like the home dog. That's been a steady diet.
Well, yeah, I like underdogs this year, and it's been doing well. Now, whether this trend will continue, who knows, but for whatever reason, underdogs have been performing really well this season so far. So if you just took all the underdogs on the card this far in the season, you'd be winning money. I don't know that that's going to keep up. The reason it's not going to keep up is the market will correct. You know, the bookmakers will get better as the season goes on at handicapping these games, and so will the rest of the market, and we'll see these lines get much tighter, and so that it'll be much more flipping a coin, you know, than what we've seen here, where you can reliably take the points. But yeah, I'm not out of it yet. I think the trend continues this week. I think that underdogs are going to do well.
So right now we've got you with Miami tonight, New Orleans on Sunday, as well as Atlanta, Jacksonville in the points, Houston in the points, Tampa in the points. Anything else from Sunday?
Oh, I'm trying to see if I picked any favorites here. I had to have. I mean, I don't know. There's Pittsburgh, who were favored over the Jets, and I took Pittsburgh, but that's kind of a cheesy play to give out. I think the whole world's taking Pittsburgh. Let me look and see in the stats or the data on betting. Yeah, Pittsburgh's got like 70% of them. Money, 69% of the bets. So the whole world is on Pittsburgh, so there's no point in getting that game out. The whole world is on the Vikings, too, and I'm going with the Saints, so that's a contrarian play right there. The Vikings have 90% of the money right now.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
How about, 90%. Let me ask you one, because they've become a darling, I think, the Lions. They're given 4.5, which, given how tight they seem to play on a regular basis, win or lose, that seems like an invitation to look at the Hawks.
Yeah, and also, you know, they've lost Swift, and they've got an injury issue with their two best players, with Swift and with Hutch on the other side of the ball. I love Detroit. I'm rooting for in my heart, I'm rooting for them to win. I'm on the Lions bandwagon, but I am very nervous this week about laying all those points, given that they've got such important players out of the game, especially Swift, who is just a machine for them.
So you're ambivalent there, huh? No, we're not going
to. I'm ambivalent. I mean, if I have to pick, I'm going to take the points with Seattle. But like I said, my heart, I'm rooting for Detroit, so it pains me to do that. I'm not putting any money on that game because I want Detroit to win, but I don't feel strongly enough about it that I'm willing to wager on it. But if I have to bet the game, I'm going to bet Seattle just because of the large number of points that they're getting there in a game where Detroit's struggling with injuries. And also, Seattle's, you know, Geno's shown that he's ready to throw that ball down the field. And, you know, Detroit's defense has been giving up some big passing plays. So that's just it. I'm nervous about that. That's another one I'm nervous about. I'm going to stay away from that one, but I am going to be rooting for the Detroit Lions.
Well, no, we'll keep it to the games you like best. And I suppose we should at least touch on the desperation angle, which was pretty fruitful last week. And you're in Vegas, so some thoughts about the Raiders. They're given 2.5 to it's pretty rare to see an 0-3 team, you know, even if they are home, they're given 2.5 at least to Broncos.
Well, I said in the paper that the Broncos are the worst 2-1 team in the NFL. I mean, you know, this team, they won last week in a game where their home fans booed them the whole game, right? So how can you feel great about that win coming off of a 1-point win where your fans are booing you the whole game? So I just think that the Raiders, they're not going to lose every game this season. You know what I mean? If they're going to win a game at home, it's going to be this week. I think the Raiders win. It's kind of now or never, too. Because
yeah,
if they do lose
yeah,
this game,
they're done.
It's scary to think. Yeah, I mean, already they're like 3% to make the playoffs already at 0-3. So things already look incredibly dire for the Raiders. But so there is a bit of a desperation angle to this. But also, I just think that Denver is, you know, they're fugazi. I don't think that's really a 2-1 team we're looking at there. That team is a shambles, and they got to figure their offense out, man. But they should feel blessed that they escaped with a win last week. And I'm not being salty just because I picked the other side. I think I tweeted that I had just watched, I said on Twitter, I can tell my grandkids I just watched the worst football game ever played.
Dave Grenick had a great tweet. We waited 14 hours for this.
Right.
Yeah, David Hill with us, and I just sent out the link to part two, Dave's conversation with Rufus Peabody, and you know the time you're spending. How long are you going to be in Vegas?
I'm here until Monday. I'm here through the weekend. I'm out here for the blackjack ball, which is this like invitation only kind of black tie affair that some of the sort of top professional gamblers in the world come together out here every year for this party, and I got invited for some reason this year, so I'm excited to go and hang around with people who are much smarter than me.
I'll take the under. Are you going to did you get a chance to bring a tape recorder and get some sound bites? And
oh, no, that's for Bowden. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't even tell you where it is. It's all a very bunch of.
Oh, really?
I can't tell you who's there or anybody who attends. Yeah, it's a. There's a lot of people there that use like pseudonyms. You know, they'll be. They go by fake names and stuff. It's yeah. I'm not going to be allowed to report on it.
Interesting. All right. It's okay. I could go in a very dark direction here, but I won't. that's fascinating. All right.
Well, a lot of these people are card counters.
Sure, sure. It's that kind of thing.
It's not that they're doing anything illegal. It's that casinos, they ban advantage players and card counters and people, anybody who's like really skilled, they don't want them to play. So it's to their economic advantage to, not let the casinos know who they are or, you know, let the casinos know how good they are. You know, some casinos, they may play games under their real name, but then when they go to an event filled with other advantage gamblers, they don't want their real name to be associated with that. So I think that's the reason for using pseudonyms and that sort of thing. But, you know, some blackjack card counters, they wear disguises. You know, they'll use different IDs and stuff to get in and play at places they've been banned. So they go through a lot of hoops to hide their identity.
As always, something bubbles to the surface in these discussions that just, you know, whether it's you know, whether it's something mundane or something fascinating. And I just found an article from Forbes from 2016 that I will send out the link. Inside the Blackjack Ball, an exclusive look at the gathering of the smartest gamblers in the world by Nicholas Colon. Interesting. All right. You've opened up another fascinating window, David Hill.
Happy to oblige. Yeah, I'm also out here because you know, we had Dinky's memorial this
Yeah.
week. Yeah. And that was really I was glad to get to come out early enough to attend that as well. You know, he was a big horse player, and he raised a lot of money for aftercare, and there were a lot of people at the memorial, and a lot of the people there, I met more than one person at the memorial who said that they met Dink because they subscribed to his hockey plays and gave money to,
right.
You know, he did this thing where he would give out hockey plays because he was a very well-known hockey handicapper, in exchange for people donating to aftercare charity. And people who I met said that they started doing that to get his hockey plays, but then they got interested in this charity they were donating to, and then got interested in this in aftercare, and you know, started to feel very proud of themselves for being involved in that. So, you know, he did a lot of good there for horses, and he was he loved horse racing. You know, it was one of his passions, and you know, I miss him. It's sad that he's gone. I think that it was great to get to come out here and be around a lot of people whose lives he touched.
Well, and David, I had no idea that you were friendly with Alan. You know, back on September 1st, we had the tribute with Paul Matisse was on, and Beth Raymer herself, and Maven was on, and Jason Beam. I would have, if I had realized you had a relationship with Dink, I absolutely would have included you.
Well, I wrote about him, I think back in 2014, I profiled him for Vice, and I spent about a week with him while he was betting the Kentucky Derby. And, you know, after writing a story about him, we just stayed in touch and stayed friends. And that was kind of the kind of person he was, that he, you know, people would kind of come into his life and he'd hang out, he'd grab onto him, you know, turn him into, he would turn acquaintances into friends. You know, he was a very friendly person like that. And so I was grateful. And he introduced me to a lot of people through the years. And, took me to wrestling shows, which was certainly an experience I wouldn't have had otherwise. but yeah, and I would go hang with him at Saratoga. Whenever I'd go up there, me and my kids would go out and always make it a point to go say hey to Dink and hang out in the backyard with him. So yeah, he was a good guy.
Well, and you and that piece, you won the Ron Rippey for that.
That's right. Yeah, and you know, he's made appearances in other things that I've written over the years too. And he was in season one of Gamblers. He was in the Emily episode. And you know, he's introduced me to people that I've ended up writing about. So, you know, it's a small world, this world of Gamblers. And he's an interesting one because he's known in the world of horse racing, but he's also very well known in the world of sports betting. But out here in Vegas, just everybody knows him.
Yeah.
You know, I met people at his memorial that were professional backgammon players. You know, like it was people from every kind of nook and cranny of this subculture were there, as well as a lot of professional wrestlers, which made for an interesting night.
Unbelievable. It's just amazing how many people he was connected to. And I'll find that Vice piece and send out a link, because I'm sure plenty of people would want to read it, including me, because I did not know this. I don't know how I missed it when I see now that you actually had you sent out a tweet too when Dink passed too. So I somehow missed this, but I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah, we'll miss him for sure. But I'm glad that I was able to make it out to Vegas for that.
Well, and bringing together a bunch of things and kind of touring, bringing people on a tour. You brought us to Circa the other day, and it looks like you're enjoying the time out there as well. So, David, good luck this week, and we will talk next Thursday.
Will do. Good luck, everybody.
Dave Hill, 77, and your New York Times NFL look. A little bit scaled down this week with Dolphins tonight. NOLA on Sunday morning. Don't forget that game starts at 9:30 Eastern. Taking Atlanta, home dog. Taking Jacksonville, but kind of expecting the Eagles to win. Home dog. He's good for home dogs every week. Houston, in this case, over the Chargers, getting 5.5. And Tampa. And, of course, I guess things will be back to normal by Sunday somewhat. They're not going to be back to normal in Fort Myers, I'll tell you that, based on what we saw last night. But Tampa at home Sunday night, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of storm-related conversation. Conversation next with Seth Merrow, and let's reach for Seth. And I know he was doing, he had a busy weekend. He was doing one of those things at the Clubhouse Racebook where even if Seth wasn't doing a bankroll challenge at the Clubhouse Racebook, the public just wants to be near Seth. He's just a magnet.
We do. You hit on a couple of things. We do have a bankroll today online, though, so Ooh. People can play online, and I think can still play the late pick five at the Belmont today. And then last Saturday we had a customer appreciation day up at the Queensbury branch, and people came out to see me.
Of course, they did.
They didn't actually come out to see me. I was there though, but there was some free food. We were giving out some vouchers and. It was one of the branches that did very well during Saratoga. Del Mar did very well for us over the summer, too. But the Queensbury branch, I'd never been there before, but right up there in Queensbury, and a good crowd turned out. So I want to thank everybody at the branch itself and all the patrons who turned out. That was a lot of fun on Saturday afternoon.
Well, I got a feeling you may have seen our friend Bill Winters. That's one of Bill's favorite I think it's his favorite branch. And Bill's got, he and his son have got the optician. I'm going to forget the name of the, it might be just Queensbury. Is it Queensbury? I've gotten glasses from Bill, and he's a big horse player. Bill is one of those people that Tina introduced me to him. He had bet Tina's window for years, and Bill Winters is one of those old-fashioned guys that charts exact a movement. He'd stand there with the clipboard and watch the will pays. And of course, you know what? It'd be worthwhile talking to Bill if the computer-assisted wagering era and its damage that it's done to, you know, everybody's psyche and everybody's bankroll, if Bill has changed his approach because of the volatility now when it comes to, you know, the movement of the will pays. I'd be very curious to ask Bill that question.
And it's interesting, too, because when you first said that, I thought, well, I remember they weren't all over the place, but I certainly remember the people with the clipboards would be looking up and, yes, charting those. And I started to think, last 3 or 4 years, I don't think I've seen that as much or at all, maybe.
Well, and I think it's more readily available just in your hand, right? I mean, it's
probably, yeah, you know, you're right. Sure.
You've got it right there, so it's easy. And plus you can go screen to screen. You can go to probables. You can go to the double will pays. You can anticipate, you know, there.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
not, it's just sort of different. Yeah, it's one of the reasons Tina stopped working the mutuals. I mean, just there's nobody, you know, the biggest players are betting, you know, online because they're getting rebates from their ADW. So they're not going to bet the windows. And so as a result, I mean, not that Tina minded teaching people how to bet, but, you know, when you're standing there explaining bets to people, it doesn't do anything for the reason that you're there to begin with, which is to earn tips.
Yeah.
And, you know, and she saw the handwriting on the wall
3-4 years ago when she quit. She said, this is going downhill fast.
Yeah, absolutely. The game has changed in that direction. There's no question about it. And yeah, you do wind up in line a lot of times behind the new folks, which is great having new folks in the game, but it's a little frustrating with a minute to post to be behind the person who's kind of looking down at their program, then up at the monitor, then giving a number to the teller, then doing that again 3 or 4 times. Yeah, that can be a little frustrating, not only for the teller, but for the player behind them as well.
Well, she also, you know, she also would come home with the tales of, a guy wanted to bet the 1 and the 1A in the exacta.
But, you know, it's developing new fans.
That's so, right.
I mean, we were all there. We were all there at 1-1.
You got to be patient. That's right. Exactly.
Who knew that David Hill discussion was fascinating? Now, as you were talking, I also was pulling up links to the article. I've got to pull that up, the secret. I wonder if his invitation was, like, slipped under the door in the middle of the night.
This was all, you know, you bring Dave Hill on, and there's no telling where things go. What was it the other day? 2 weeks ago, there was some bizarre, I had to pause for a second, and there was a topic that, in passing, he mentioned. A listener will have to remind me. There was something really funny. Oh, the ball boys, the auditions for the tennis ball boys at ball girls. That whole sidebar 2 weeks ago in the shadow.
Like professional tennis?
Yes. Yes.
I didn't know
that. Oh, it was hysterical.
Is it like how fast you can run?
Well, it's more than that. You got to also, you know, you also got to be Louis Aparicio. You got to, you know, scoop up the, yeah, you got to. You got to do a Mark Belanger and, you know, and then Rico Petrucelli.
Well, I guess that is true. I think we've all seen, I know we've all seen people who would not be agile enough to have that job and probably think they could and show up. So maybe the tryouts or the auditions probably a good idea.
It was a very funny, and he just stopped me in my tracks like he did today with the blackjack ball that we immediately find this. You know, inside the blackjack ball, and no one knows, and where it is, and what's the most highly guarded secret in Vegas.
Yeah, I'm definitely gonna have to read that article. I'm gonna have to read his article on Dink too, because I don't know. I was unfamiliar with Dink until you started talking about him after his passing a few weeks ago, but now I have subsequently seen a bunch of things on Twitter and whatnot. I'm going to have to get Dave's article on him.
It's too bad that you didn't, you could have, I wish, it, you know, when you came out to NHC, we could have introduced you. And you had, you know, any time over at the Matisse, at the Matisse Center for the Advancement of Gambling in the backyard.
When you said he was in the backyard, I assumed that's where he was sitting.
Yeah,
and I thought maybe at some point I did in passing meet him when I walked by and talked to Paul and Duke. So that's possible, certainly.
And I will reiterate, I did not get it. I got to reach out to Duke. Carson, his son, won the... won the Los Al tournament apparently over the weekend.
Oh wow, nice. Who knew that was genetic? But I guess, well, Paul and Duke's father. So yeah, I guess
it all starts with Chick.
Yeah, passing down the generations. You gotta love that. Very good.
Without Chick, there is no Paul and Duke, and there's no everybody else that's coming down the line and from Team Matisse. That'll keep things going. I'm sort of reaching for the wire here. Which people, anybody that listens knows that when my voice starts to hollow out, you know that I'm. And you can appreciate this, Seth, because you you know, you're a solo act when it comes to the television, and you do. What's the longest? What's the typical longest stint? Like 4 hours?
Usually, my typical in the afternoon is 4 hours. That's what I try to do. Like, I'll go from 1 to 5, or, you know, depending on the time of year when things kick off, I'll hang around for 4 hours. But, you know, when you get in the winter and you start at noon, sometimes I'll go to 5 or 5:30 or so. So I'll stick around for you know, 5, 5 and a half sometimes. A big day, maybe 6. But the difference is, in the afternoon, I'm just inserting myself in between races and whatnot, making some comments. You're going straight through. So the 3 straight hours is, that can be a grind.
Well, and what I was going to refer to is that it is crazy when you think about it. We've gotten to the point where generally we're taking the two breaks at the top of hour two and three. And there was a time where we were taking breaks every 15 minutes when we started. And what's different is that from the time we started on Sirius, this is inside baseball, but Seth will appreciate it. When we were at Sirius, there were firm station IDs that we owned the bottom of the hours and Sirius owned the top of the hours. And so they would run ads, their own ads, at let's say, you know, these days 10 and 11, and we would run ads at 9:30 and 10:30 and 11:30. And they would also actually run the ad at the end of the show, so, you know, say noon. And when there was a certain point where we got transferred to XM satellite. And there's more room for sports on XM than there is on Sirius because of the way the two networks, you know, basically were created. And so they switched us over there where there's more sports play-by-play channels. Well, when we did that, we became what they call a pass-through, which is basically they throw the switch at 9 and they turn the switch off at noon. And we got 3 hours. We could do whatever we want. And we no longer, you know, are obligated to take a firm break at 10 or 11. So as a result, I mean, typically I'm trying to take, you know, two breaks. You wouldn't think that taking one break instead of two would, you know, would turn me into, you know, a rented mule. But it for whatever reason, it's 2.5 minutes basically where you get, you know, you get to rest your voice, maybe get a, I'm off coffee for 2 days because you're going to laugh like this is another. What have you done, Seth? There's no guest that sends me off careening into idiotic stupidity more than you. You do this to me all the time. I got my teeth whitened. This is the funniest part of this is. This is I'm on television, what, 6 weeks a year, 7 weeks a year at the most with you, right?
Yeah.
Well, that ended Labor Day weekend. I won't be on TV again until July, but for whatever reason, I it's the way the schedule, they can only take me. So Tina has been bugging me when I tell you for 10 years. Get your teeth. You got to get your teeth whitened. You got to get your teeth whitened. That's why you're not on television more. Literally, she says you're not getting calls to be on TV because of. So I'm waiting. Everybody knows my number. It's been the same number for 20 years. I'm waiting for the phone to ring. My teeth are now whiter than they've ever been. This is the chance to put me on television because my teeth are. I now have this glistening. I'm one person in media that can really say I've got a Colgate smile.
So you smile now, and there's that little glint that you see.
Exactly.
In the
Bing.
Nice.
Bing.
Nice. Perfect. Perfect. But that's not, you can come down to the studio any Sunday. I'd be happy to have you join me any Sunday. But half of the time, you're out of town.
You mean to come sit on the air with you?
Yeah.
Boy, I don't.
Oh, or. Or we can fire up the Zoom too.
Zoom. There'll never be another Zoom on that network. Don't even pretend. I would come hang out. I would come down to the fabulous.
All right, let's figure it out.
Wow.
Let's figure it out.
Watch some football.
Oh. My Jets gave me a little thrill there a couple of weeks ago, but I have not been a football guy now for 4 or 5 or 6 years. But Syracuse, hello. Oh, yeah. I went back into football.
There he is, the Saltine Warrior.
The other day, did you see my tweets the other day? I'm going through a storage box. I found some old photos of quarterback Seth from high school. I tweeted them out probably a week and a half or so ago.
Oh, my God. You're kidding.
No.
Oh, my God, I've got to find that now.
Yeah.
This is very exciting. Quarterback set.
Yeah. I was excited. I'm going through the storage box. There's a little package of photos. I pull it out. It's quarterback set. So I immediately tweeted.
Well, hold on. I'm going right. Where'd you play ball?
Amsterdam.
At Amsterdam.
Rugged Rams.
Amsterdam. The Amsterdam Rams?
Yeah, the Rugged Rams.
The Rugged Rams.
Yep.
All right, I'm thumbing through this. People want to see this. Oh my God! Look at this.
Right.
Look at this.
And then I'm thinking, looking at the picture, and I'm thinking when I moved a few years ago, I think, and I went and looked in one of the bottom drawers in the bedroom, and there was the jersey.
Oh, this is fabulous. This is unbelievable. This is like unsealing a time capsule. Look at
yeah, you like hitting there.
Well, you really. I was going to say you. I'm just looking at this picture. Not only are you wearing number 12, you're left-handed.
Yeah, I tweeted out. I said I was a big fan of Joe Namath, which I was, but I was a lefty like Kenny Stabler.
How about that? This is amazing. All right, I was reaching out to you to get some plays today. What are you playing today? Unbelievable!
I do have that pick five play, but I'll look at a pick four for you, which I'm going to kind of riff off of in that pick five later. But I'll look at the Belmont. I'll look at a pick three today because I like the last race. The last race is kind of fun, so I want to toss that out. Man, if I was on yesterday, I had that firster from Rusty Arnold.
Oh, good job. 19 to 1.
Yes, 19 bucks.
19 bucks, excuse me.
But yeah, it was a nice, it had all kinds of win early breeding and really had to work to get the victory at the end. But that was a nice one. But I think this last race is fun too. But so what do we have? A little less than 5 minutes to.
You've got, you got 3.5 minutes.
All right. So the late pick four at Belmont at the Big Eight today starts out in race number 6. I'll use 3 of them. I have it 5, 8, and 7. Hit the Woe. It's one of those horses that's hard to know what to do with, but I landed there because I like the last race. If you believe the number of the last race, the horse is going to be the one to beat in here, I think. But the number of the last race was also a little bit of an aberration. I'm just going to go that the horse has gotten good right now, and so I'm going to land there. But a little more consistent with the numbers, ready to venture. The number 8 horse comes off a nice win at Colonial, so I'm going to land there on the ticket as well. And Foyette also coming out of a good number. Ran 6, but it was in a little stakes race up at Saratoga behind Caravel. And so I think, you know, this one, again, consistently tosses some numbers that I think fit in the mix here. So in the 6, the opening leg of that pick 4, I'll use 3 in there, 5, 8, and 7. 7th race, I'll go a couple of deep in here. They're on the grass. They have it 6, 5, 2, and 1, but I'll use the 6 and the 5, Good Governance and Therapist. I think they're kind of comparable. I landed on the Chad Klarovich runner, Good Governance, who's 3rd back off a little bit of an early season layoff. Won the first start back up at Saratoga, then went down and tried a stakes race down at Monmouth, ran 4th in there, beaten as the favorite, gets back into this, you know, non-winners of 3 company. And so I'll land on that one on top. A Therapist, pretty good, pretty talented New York bred who can face open company and has done so successfully in the past. And, you know, comes out of a try down to Kentucky Downs last time. Those are always salty races, but was the beaten favorite. So I'll use that one in the mix as well. In the Dunlap to be a seventh race. I'll use the six and the five. The eighth race, it's an allowance non-winners of one other than a mile and an eighth. I have it 6, 5, 3, and 7. I debated of using all of those, but I'm going to cut it down because I want to use all four of mine in the last race. So I'm only going to use the 6, 5, and 3. Pletcher has both the 6 and 5 up to the mark and gasoline. They both ran very well in the last couple of starts. Gasoline won up at Saratoga to break the maiden, and really throughout the career has run pretty well vis-a-vis the number. Up to the mark won the maiden race up at Saratoga early in the meet and then moved into this kind of company and ran a decent third after having led much of the way. And, it, you know, you move this condition up, sometimes it'll take a start or two to figure it out. So with that experience under the belt, I tilted towards up to the mark, but I'm going to use gasoline as well. And then in the third spot, I'll also put on the ticket Golden Alchemist. Comes up from a try at Parks and Smarty Jones, moves back into the more proper non-winners of one after having broken the maiden two back. So the Chad Brownwater might wind up being the one to beat. So in the eighth, I have it 6, 5, and 3. And then, as I say, I think this last race is kind of fun. State Bred Maiden Special is going 6. And I think there's some breeding here and some connections and whatnot that make it fun. I'll use all four of mine. 3, 1, 2, and 9. 3 is Looms Boldly. Goes out for Marshall Graham, 10-strike racing. And this is this horse had a sibling, Critical Value, who was racing for 10-strike a couple of years back and wound up being the champion New York Bred Juvenile Filly. Critical Strike was second in debut, won in the next couple of starts. There's another sibling called Whittington Park that won in the second start. A sibling called Steam Engine was second, and then won in the third start. So there's win early on the bottom. Golden Sense has win early on the top. It's Marshall Graham and 10 Strike. I'll put Looms Go Boldly on top at a 6-1 morning line. West Star, it's the first foal from the dam, so there wasn't much to find there, but the dam herself won the first two of her career, was 10 for 23 overall, was a great
Stakes
winner. She was a three-year-old New York Bred Filly champion also. So I thought there was maybe a little bit there for West Star. And then Shadow Dragon for Bill Mott worked 21.2 before the Ocala sale by Army Mule. There are two siblings that weren't win early. I thought this one may break through, though, and Deliberate Risk, I thought, could be a little bit interesting coming in from Southern California to face the New York Reds in the second career start. So in that finale, I'll go 3, 1, 2, and 9.
So 5, 7, 8 with?
5, 6 with 3, 5, 6 with 1, 2, 3, 9.
Very good. Nice. 12, 24, 72, $36. Seth, I appreciate it. Talk next week.
Yeah, good luck to everybody.
Seth Merrow too, everybody. Running and gunning, Seth. Thanks to Seth. Thanks to David Hill, Tony Black earlier, and Eric Hamelbeck with the extensive update for everybody on the high side. Talk to you tomorrow. We can improve it.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio. The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night nationwide. Get the action in thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? The University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standard bred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners or other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.